Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Light 100.5 WRCH. Joining us today, Susan Linker from Our Companions Animal Rescue.
Hi. Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
There's lots of good stuff happening for you guys. For everybody out there listening that doesn't know, Our Companions is an animal rescue. And they promise to always do the right thing by animals. This is regardless of challenge or cost. You guys are saving not just dogs and cats. You're saving animals across Connecticut.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's our mission, is to help domestic pets. And what a pleasure to do this work, I tell you. I mean, and there are so many wonderful animals that are looking for homes and so many unbelievable people who are involved in this cause. You know, I am always so heartened by the people and the generosity who are in the animal welfare and animal protection field. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love that we get our companion pet of the week on the morning show, and I always enjoy seeing them, and it always gets me fired up to get a new pet. And it's great the work you do, because you have a sanctuary. It's genuinely these pets are really taken care of.
Yeah, the sanctuary is unique in New England. There's nothing like it. And that was, you know, by design. Before I started the organization, Our Companions Animal Rescue, I worked at a traditional shelter for about 8 years. And, you know, many people have been to what we call dog pounds or shelters. And basically, it's just, you know, lines of cages.
They serve a purpose.
They do. They serve an important purpose, but a very temporary purpose. You know, it's not a place for animals to be kept on any long-term basis.
Psychologically, it's just not health-wise good for them, psychologically good for them.
Exactly.
And living in a cage is no way for any creature.
Exactly. And the purpose of shelters is to temporarily house animals that are homeless and find them new homes. But the reality is that a lot of animals that end up in shelters, you know, have some special needs, and they're harder to adopt out. And these are the animals, by definition, that spend long periods of time, the seniors, the ones that are very shy or scared. They may demonstrate aggressive behavior because they're protecting themselves. And when you, or animals that have been abused and don't trust people, you know, when you put them in a very intensive, confined situation like that, it brings out the worst in them, obviously. So that was always a challenge.
You're not going to be in a great mood if you're in a cold cage.
Yeah, exactly. And but you know, for those highly adoptable animals, great, get them in, get them out. I mean, but when I worked at the shelter, my heart always broke for those animals who had those special needs. You know, the diabetic cat.
Yeah.
You know, the 11-year-old diabetic cat in a shelter that's competing with kittens.
Right.
That's a hard pet to adopt. And you know, so the sanctuary's function and its purpose, and the reason why we created it, was to be able to work in partnership with these shelters and take those special animals out of that system and put them in an environment that's more home-like, where they can, if it takes 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, to heal and find that right home, they're living in an environment that is enriching, and every day they get more and more adoptable.
And genuinely, these are homes.
Yeah.
The sanctuary is a home. If you go on ourcompanions.org and you take a photo or a video tour and you check out the behind the scenes, you guys have really set up these little cottages.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's meant to feel and serve like a home, and not to be kitschy, to be actually functional. You know, we have some dogs that come in that have never lived in a home.
Have never slept on a couch.
Exactly. And so the reason why it's set up that way is, you know, first of all, to give them the home-like experience, because it could take them, you know, several months to find a home. But also, you know, we can get to know them. We can then train them and experience who they are and what behaviors we need to address while we're there. So we can specialize in taking animals from shelters that have some special needs. For example, we pulled a cat from a shelter that was dropped off because it wasn't using the litter box. You think that animal's going to get adopted?
Yeah.
No, most people want cats who use a litter box.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, this is an animal that probably wouldn't have survived the shelter experience, but we can bring him to the sanctuary now.
And you know what? Something like inappropriate litter box use is It could be a million different things. It could be that the cat doesn't like the way the litter feels on his toes. It could be that the litter box isn't high enough. Yeah. You just have to take a little time to figure out what's going on. It could be a medical issue.
Exactly. And, you know, in many cases, it's a behavioral issue. Also, maybe there's something, you know, new children in the family, some kind of stressor. So by taking the animal to the sanctuary, we can then get to know them, set up environments that the animal can be successful, and then have a track record and say to adopters, hey, we've had this cat for 6 months, and she uses the litter box just fine. Mm-hmm. And this is what kind of home it needs so we can maintain this you know, good behavior.
Yeah.
And these, and you know, when it comes to animals that might have been, you know, super shy or unsocialized, to be at the sanctuary, to be surrounded by people is really, really important. And volunteers are really what help make all of that happen at the sanctuary.
Now, you guys have gone on a $5 million multi-year campaign. You've been raising money forever and ever and ever.
And ever and ever
because it's an ongoing thing. You created the... I mean, this is huge. Yeah. This is a sanctuary. And when you use the word sanctuary, it genuinely is the definition of sanctuary for homeless pets with no place else to turn.
Yeah. And I mean, that really is the goal of it. And, you know, with the construction... The campus that we have ultimately will have 16 cottages, 8 cottages for cats and 8 cottages for dogs. But we're doing it over a multi-year kind of multi-campaign approach.
Yeah, phases.
Yeah, we've done already 3 phases of construction. So right now we have 4 cottages for dogs and 2 cottages for cats that are double size.
Okay.
And it's one of the things I just wanted to speak to is, you know, what goes on there at the sanctuary is pretty unique. I mean, basically, we have 400 volunteers in our organization, but over 200 of them volunteer at the sanctuary. And each animal, when they're received there, gets a behavioral treatment plan and a medical treatment plan. Usually, they have both medical and behavioral issues. And then each week, it's updated by the staff. And then the volunteers are the ones that kind of carry out whatever type of activities need to
therapies
happen.
Therapies,
yes,
even.
Therapies. Whether it's bringing a massage therapist, whether it's chiropractic work, if it's a medical thing. If we take a lot of animals from shelters that might need some kind of orthopedic work, or just behavioral. We have some animals that are so scared that, you know, they literally crawl across the floor. They're so afraid.
I think about the videos that I've seen on Facebook of dogs in cages at a shelter, like the before picture and then the after they got adopted, and what they're like, the smile and the joy.
Yeah.
I know I sound like a lunatic, but there's genuine smiles on dogs' faces, and you can see the difference in their emotions.
Yeah, and what happens in between those two is what we do at the sanctuary and what volunteers help us do. You know, it could be a matter of just, you know, taking animals out on field trips to expose them slowly to new things and places. We have our Valerie Friedman Program Center in Manchester.
Yes.
So that's where we have all of our dog behavior work. So a lot of times volunteers take dogs to our classes at the center. And basically we have some of the best trained dogs in the world at the sanctuary as a result. Or it could just be, you know, just walks around our 47-acre campus and just getting the exercise and the outside time that they need. But the dogs spend very little time in their bedrooms. Each dog has a bedroom. Sometimes they double up if they're friends. You know, but most of the time, you know, they're out doing activities because they are not going to be getting well if they're just sitting in their room. So, you know, our first group of volunteers comes around 8 o'clock. Of course, our staff is there around 7 a.m. And then it's, you know, outside walks. Each dog gets at least 2 1-hour walks, but usually other activities as well. That happens throughout the day. And then around 4 o'clock, it's dinner time. We feed them, put them in their rooms, and that's actually when our staff leaves. Then we have a tuck-in group of volunteers that come
that's
in around
so
6.
Cute. The tuck-in crew.
The tuck-in crew comes in, lets everybody out. And because the cottages are like a house, there's a living room, there's a kitchen. So generally they come and make dinner there and just watch a movie, sit on the couch and have that kind of normal family time.
Yeah.
And then
what it's going to be like when they get adopted and go to a home.
Exactly. And then around 9 o'clock, the final outside time is done. Then they put them in the room, tuck them in and lock up. And then our staff's there first thing in the morning. And every day it happens.
That's amazing. This is you've got a great group of volunteers. These are like-minded, animal-loving people. And they're volunteers. They do this with their own free time. And you know what that does for an organization like yours? That's one thing you're not paying for.
Yeah.
So
oh,
more
God,
money,
we could never do this with staff.
More money
goes
back into the programs.
Absolutely.
And the needs of the animals.
Yeah, and now with this new construction we have this beautiful cat building that we designed, which is absolutely fantastic. We've learned a lot about how cats are happy, and they need a lot of vertical space. So each of their rooms has, you know, rafters where they can kind of climb and and get through. They also have, each room has a catio, so they can go outside safely. And get some fresh air.
I want to build a catio for my cats so bad.
You totally should.
Amazing.
You absolutely should. You know, but these, you know, being a cat is a very specific thing, and to understand cat behavior and what they need to be physically and mentally happy and healthy is 100% what's required in order to evolve them from an unadoptable animal to an animal that's ready to go to a home. And our staff and volunteers are fantastic about, you know, giving that type of love and attention to each individual animal. We just took a cat from one of the shelters. She was a senior cat. She's probably 11 or 12. She's in the beginning stages of kidney failure.
Mm-hmm. Which is, it happens.
It happens, yeah. She's a senior kitty. When we found her, when the animal control found her, she was outside, so she was emaciated. She's actually, a Himalayan. She's a purebred, which always is surprising to me, declawed. And, you know, she was starved to death. Her fur was so matted. When they shaved it off, you can kind of hold it up with one piece of fur, which is a big clump.
One big hunk.
But you know what? We were like, you know, she's going to come to the sanctuary. We're going to give her whatever she needs, and maybe she'll be here for, you know, a few weeks. You know, she wasn't ready to go. She was a fighter. Now, oh my gosh, it's like beyond our wildest dreams. She's jumping up and she's cuddling with all the volunteers. Aww. Sometimes just giving animals a chance to heal and putting them in an environment where there's so much love and kindness, it's a miraculous thing what can happen sometimes. And I'll tell you, there is someone who's going to adopt that cat.
It's just amazing to me that a declawed cat was outside. A declawed Himalayan cat was outside.
Yeah. Yes. Unfortunately, neglect has, you know, it goes across the board.
I thought declawing was illegal in Connecticut.
Oh, if only it was. It's not. It's illegal in Europe. But in our country, we still, unfortunately.
I feel like there's just maybe not a lot of vets that are willing to do it,
It's very infrequent. Most of the declawed cats I see now are seniors. Most vets are evolved where they recognize that mutilating animals really isn't the right thing to do.
It's like removing the tip of our fingers.
It's exactly what it is.
And then it creates a sensitivity, and then they can't protect themselves, and then you throw them out in the cold. How's she going to catch food?
It's a lot. Unbelievably inhumane. I think a lot of vets have evolved. Right now in Massachusetts, they passed a law where you can't debark dogs. That's still legal. Absolutely. So we're hoping that, you know, Connecticut will kind of catch up a little bit and enact some of these laws as well.
So you've got all these great people that come in and do the tuck-in service or the feeding and the walking.
And cuddling. That's a hard job to
do.
Kitten socialization. Oh, it's torture.
Now, you guys are doing the right thing by all of these animals, but you probably, you know, do you need more volunteers?
Oh,
do you need
God,
people?
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone who's dedicated to spending hours a night.
Exactly.
Tucking animals in, even though that's an awesome job.
Yeah.
You could use anything because once someone is a filer, if you're good at filing, do it. If you know Microsoft Excel, we can use you
exactly.
too. Find out hone what your skill is and volunteer with that. It doesn't always have to be like a specialty.
Exactly. I mean, our sanctuary is in Ashford, which is near UConn, but we also have a program center that's in Manchester and a lot of volunteer opportunities that are available there too. For example, we have one program called Canine College. Unbelievable program. Basically, it's a dog behavior and training program. And much like with the sanctuary, we recognize that we couldn't possibly pay all the staff to do what we need to be done. With our Canine College, we recognize we can't have that many paid dog trainers. So what we do is we have a curriculum where we can take you, Mary, put you in this program, this dog training program, and train you to be a dog trainer. And all you have to do is to then use your skills and help animals in our classes. So all of our classes are run by volunteers.
Wow.
And it's fantastic. If you love dog and dog behavior, you can get a free education on how to be a dog trainer through us. All we ask you to do is help our clients. And, you know, it really is a really cool program. So these are the type of ways that people can get involved and help. And, you know, you're among a community of people who are all like-minded, and there's something really positive about that. You know, a lot of people who are animal people kind of feel sometimes they're kind of like marginalized and freaky.
I feel like a crazy cat lady often.
Yes, but when you're among people who have that sensitivity and that deep empathy, you know, the kind of people that'll just pull over if you see an animal on the side of the road, you know, no matter what. That's the community of people that when you have all of them together, it really is a very positive environment.
If you're just joining us today on Spotlight on Light 100.5 WRCH, we're talking to Susan Linker from Our Companions Animal Rescue, and we are talking about the sanctuary and the build and how expansive it's become and the animals that need to be brought there. We just were talking about volunteers and, the need for it. And you've got some requirements for volunteers, though.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when we're dealing with the animals, particularly at the sanctuary, these are animals that, you know, have some sensitivities, and they've probably had suffered some abuse in the past. So we require adult volunteers. We have kids that are 15, 16, 17, if they'll volunteer with a family member, an adult family member, that's mm-hmm. fine.
And a partner.
But it's just too much to ask a child to read body language yeah. on a cat or a dog. You know, and a lot of these animals, they just need some kind of special and very delicate attention. It's a sanctuary. It's not a petting zoo. Exactly. And that's what I tell people. When they want to come and just, pet the animals, you know, you can do that. But just
come for a visit, that's fine.
Exactly. But to be a volunteer, really, it's to put on, you know, we require the people know that they're there for the animals and respect the animals. Some of these animals you may have to go on a walk with a dog that's new and not touch them for the first 2 days. Yeah. You know, these are the type of things that, so if you are open to being like that and doing what needs to be done for the animal's sake, that's great. But mostly, you know, we just want people who will commit to a program and just be part of our team.
And you go to a volunteer orientation, they'll teach you all the stuff you need
yes.
to know, and then, you know, you're going to be performing tasks, working independently, mm-hmm. and following instructions that are going to be communicated to you to best help yeah. whatever animal you're working
exactly.
with.
The orientations we have are every month in Manchester, and it gives you an overview of our organization and all the programs. That way you can sign up for what you want to do. And then from there, you'll be working directly with the volunteer or the staff person that's in that department, whether it's working at the sanctuary with the dogs or the cats or the Canine College program, or even just working in our offices. I mean, for example, all of our bookkeeping is done by volunteers. There are a lot of, you know, talented and skilled accountants that are
animal loving accountants.
Exactly. So we'll take any help we can get, basically.
And if you are in the under 17 mm-hmm. range, and you're a young person and you are involved in your community and you love animals and you want to do something, there's a whole list of things that you can do, even though you can't become a volunteer.
Exactly. Not yet.
but you will someday.
Exactly.
You have a whole program set up for that.
We do. And kids are great at supporting animal welfare causes, whether they're great at collecting stuff, too, whether it's collecting cat food or supplies or doing fundraisers. I've always just humbled by how effective kids are at
they can raise money.
Raising money and raising stuff that we need. And one of the biggest things that we need right now is cat food.
Cat food.
I can't say it enough. We have a program called Sterile Feral, and it's our TNR program, which, and that's an acronym for Trap, yeah. Neuter, Return.
Okay.
And it's for feral cats that are outside. And we basically, people are feeding cats. We want to make sure that the cats are vaccinated and sterilized. A lot of the people who are feeding these cats are seniors, and sometimes they have a colony of 25, 30 cats. That's a lot of food, particularly in the winter, because they consume large amounts of food.
They're not catching as much because it's winter.
And also it's cold.
Yeah.
And they need to keep kind of generating energy to keep warm. So if you have a civic group or a school and you want to do a feral cat food drive, we would absolutely love that. We also have a program where you can design very simple, I can do this and I'm not handy at all, cat shelters. Cats do need warm shelters if they're living outside. And
I've seen videos about this,
yeah.
but I've never actually made one.
There's elaborate plans, or if you are handy, some Boy Scouts groups will make wood if they're, you know, working in a wood shop like that. But we also have those that you can make with Rubbermaid containers.
Yeah, the tubs.
Yeah, the tubs. And
storage
you insulate
tubs.
Them, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And the cats use them, and they absolutely love them. And the caregivers, you know, it's hard to see those cats outside. You know, they're feral. They don't want to be inside.
Yeah,
but it's hard for us, the people,
yeah.
to see them outside. But when, you know, a cat comes out of one of its shelters, if you stick your hand in after, it is toasty warm. They stay nice and warm. If they're well fed and they have shelter, they do wonderfully out in the winter.
And as long as they've been trapped and neutered and then returned to their own population, this is what I understand about feral cats, is that if you return them to the population and you don't just, you know, take them away and neuter them and then try and put them someplace
else. You can't put them someplace
else. You have to return them to their colony, because then they won't try and replace that empty spot.
Yeah, exactly. They actually stand as placeholders, and the population is then stable. One of the things that we discourage is relocating feral cats. The mortality rate is remarkably high. Cats are territorial animals. Their whole world is their space, their territory. This is why your cat freaks out so much when you take them to the vet. You know, they've left their territory. So, and when you remove a cat from its territory, it psychologically is unbelievably disturbing for them, but also the threats are enormous, because in that territory, they knew the traffic patterns, they knew the other cats that were around, you know,
they
had
smells,
a routine.
They
exactly. They were able to stay safe. If cats are very routine oriented and very territorial, when you remove all of that, pretty much they're not successful in surviving. So under all means, we say, please return them back. If there's some, you know, crisis where that place no longer exists,
they're
demolishing a building,
then
go as close by as you can and set up a new location there. But we really discourage relocating feral cats. It's not good for them at all.
So we're getting food for the feral cats, because we've got the wintertime is upon us, and we really want to do that. But if you're a young person and you want to do some fundraising within the parameters of your school, first of all, contact our companions and let them know that you want to plan a fundraiser. And then talk to your student council and your activities board advisor or a teacher or a principal and make sure you get permission from your school to do a fundraiser, first of all. But then you guys have some really great idea for kids, whether it's the hat pass, when kids can wear hats to school, $2 for the day, and everybody can wear any kind of hat they want. There's dance fundraisers, and then Penny Wars, which I love the idea of Penny Wars. I mean, this is, you just keep filling things up. Work with your teacher. Let's get pennies. And you know what? You can make a lot of change with change.
Oh, absolutely. You know, people don't use pennies anymore. And that's still money.
My husband, he hands them all to me and I put them in a jar.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like change in his pockets. He doesn't like any of
it. It's amazing how many pennies you can collect. Mm-hmm. And if a whole school's doing that, that adds up.
Those pennies all add up. So you get a collection of pennies. You can do a bake sale.
Oh, this
car
time
washes.
Of year particularly,
Oh, and like you said, the building the cat shelter, or even a tag sale at your school. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of things like that. Or if your kids are having a birthday party and you're like, we got enough toys. We got enough stuff in my house. I've had friends whose children have done pet food fundraisers.
Yeah. More and more kids, I find, are when they have their parties, are saying, don't get me stuff. Bring stuff for the animals. And I find that just fantastic. And what a lesson for kids.
It's a nice altruistic lesson.
Yeah.
Like, teach your kids to be givers. My son already, you know, it was, you know, putting money in the bell. And he looked right up at me and he's like, giving feels good. He's four, mind you. So, you know, kids get it. And if you teach your kids this early on, it'll just grow as they become adults.
And it's so sweet when they're so proud and they deliver their load and they get a tour and see the animals that they're helping. I mean, that stuff makes a big impression.
Absolutely. So we want to get volunteers in. We want to get money for all the programs that you offer, too. So all of these fundraisers can go to cat food and to go to building new cottages and to doing all kinds of great things. But if somebody wants to find a pet from you, let's talk about adoption.
Sure, absolutely. We have a fantastic adoption program. We are basically focused on animals that are in our community. We largely support our municipal shelters. And just a little PSA on that. Not everybody knows that every town pretty much has their own shelter, their municipal shelter or their town shelter. And if it's a very small town, there might be a regional shelter.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason to go online and buy an animal offline. First, look in your backyard.
Yeah.
Animal control is so underfunded. And I'll be honest, a lot of these shelters are awful. They were built in the 50s and 60s and they are crumbling. Get animals out of there. Check out your local shelters. And that's where we pull from primarily. Because a lot of those animals have some special needs. So adoption through our program, we have what we call the lifetime promise. If you adopt from us, for the rest of the animal's life, we'll be there for you. If something happens 5 years down the road, you find yourself having some financial problems and you can't afford that vet visit, call us. We'll help you take care of it. If for some reason, God forbid, you can't keep your pet, we will take them back. And if you need any behavioral help or anything along the way.
The dog training classes, the canine college.
Absolutely. And that's something that we really feel strongly about, because while, you know, when every animal that we take into our program, we have a commitment for the rest of its life. And we hope to have a partnership with the adopter that they'll always feel that they can come back to us no matter what. And I think that's kind of unique. And I think that's really important to know that, you know, you're not on your own when when you adopt a pet, because they're living creatures that deserve as much support as possible.
And here's the thing about making a decision to find the next, that's what I call it, the next love of your life.
Yeah.
Because it really is.
Yeah.
And, you form relationships like my relationships with my cats. Sometimes I spend more time with my cats than I do the people in my lives, you know, because they sleep in the bed with me. They follow me into the bathroom.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome how they do that? Like, you cannot close that door without them with you.
It really becomes a codependent thing. This is a big decision to find the next love of your life. And you want to find the best match
yes,
for you. So if you're somebody who thinks you want a dog, but you don't like to go for hour-long walks every day. So.
In the winter.
So you need to find the right dog that's right for you. You're not going to get a dog that needs to run around and burn energy all day
And
long.
We know all the dogs that we place have been, had met our behaviors. They've been behavior evaluated, and we have a profile of exactly what kind of home they need. In many cases, we know the original family, so we can get background on the animals. And when they're at the sanctuary, we know them intimately.
Yeah.
So we can make really good matches because we have a really good understanding of who the dog or cat is. And that's the most important thing. What I always find kind of shocking is when people adopt an animal online, they get it shipped to them, and off the bus, they are just handed them an animal and say, okay, there you
good go. Luck.
That shocks me. I mean, thankfully, a lot of times it works out, but my. I mean, I would never get adopted an animal unless I got to meet it first, you know?
Yeah.
And also to be able to have the benefit of knowing who that animal is.
I don't
is.
Buy jeans or pants without trying, you know what I mean? Like, I need to try stuff on. So you need to get to know if this is going to be the right fit for you. Now, my morning show partner, Mike, has gotten dogs from you, and you have found him the perfect loves of his life. So if I was to come to you and say, okay, I'm ready for a cat, I'll take someone who's a little older.
Perfect.
A little more difficult to adopt, but they got to be a spooner.
Oh.
You know, like, I need somebody who's going to get
actually,
under the covers.
I have a cat right in my head when you said that.
And sleep on the bed with me and put his head on the pillow.
Apache would love to go home with you.
Yeah, I want a love who's gonna get, like, I don't have a blankie. Mm-hmm. I had my cat forever and I lost my guy, and I feel a real absence with that missing from my sleep scenario.
I understand.
So you would be able to point out exactly which cat I needed for.
I would recommend Apache.
I need a little spoon.
And maybe you'll take his girlfriend Charlotte too, because these two cats are beautiful. They're both seniors, but young seniors. And Apache is black, beautiful long hair, and Charlotte is a tortoiseshell cat. And sometimes they cuddled together.
They twirl up.
And they twirl up in this little, like, pretzel thing.
Love ball.
And I wish I were a miniature human. I could just get in between them and kind of get on in there. Oh, yeah.
The purring and the
wonderful
heat.
Wonderful.
So that's what Art Companions does. You go in and say, you know what? This is what I'm looking for in my existence. I want a dog who's little and I can take for a quick walk and that wants to sit and watch, you know, This Is Us with us.
Maestro.
You know?
Maestro's looking for
a
home.
I love it. I love that you're ready. I would love that you're ready for it. Or somebody who's like, you know, I go trail running and I want a dog who is active like that and can go on adventures with me.
Exactly. You know, I don't know if you remember, in August there were two German shepherds that were abandoned in Glastonbury. They were in that dog park there.
Yeah.
Well,
I remember that.
Remember that? So about a month ago, our canine operations director, she goes from pound to pound looking for dogs to pull to the sanctuary, and she stumbled upon those two shelters. They were still there. The animal control got dozens of calls, people who wanted to adopt them in August, right when that story broke.
Yeah.
But then no one showed up.
Through.
So now they're at our sanctuary. They do have some health problems that we're working on, but two gorgeous German shepherds. And they need to go home together. They are super bonded.
Super bonded.
You know, so if you're a shepherd person, let us know, because,
call.
I mean, these are the type of animals that are amazing. And, you know, once we get them all well and fixed up, they are going to be awesome, awesome family companions.
Now, if someone does want to get in touch with you, how can they do that for
adoptions? Absolutely. The way you could get in touch in any way for any reason, you know, visit us at ourcompanions.org or give us a call at 860-242-9999. The way that our program works for our adoptions is we ask you to fill an application so we can assign an adoption counselor to you.
Yeah, it's like a matchmaker.
Exactly. That way we can get to know you, and then you have someone right at your disposal that you can work with to then see what's a good match for maybe who we have in our program now, but also who may be in local shelters that we know about too. So it's really good to get involved.
It's really amazing stuff. Susan Linker from Our Companions Animal Rescue, thank you so much for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I can't wait till I'm ready.
And you know the first person to call, right?
That's right.
All right.
I got you. And thank you so much for listening to Spotlight this morning on Light 100.5. WRCH.